I see a lot of videos from different parts of the manosphere pointing out the double standards and injustices being done to men. It's probably the most common topic within most of the content that I see. There's nothing wrong with pointing out the double standards and injustices, but I believe that behind these videos is a sincere but misguided belief that awareness will somehow bring about some social change. That even if women won't hear reason, perhaps if enough men are aware of the truth, something will happen. It won't, and I'll explain why. But first, I'll need to lay some groundwork. MGTOW isn't really about fixing a broken system, it's about not participating in the system. It's like a carnival game that you can't win. The phrase, the only way to win is not to play, sounds accurate at first, but in reality you never really win either way. By not playing, you are made no better off than when you started, so you didn't win anything. Not playing the game merely prevents you from losing, creating a sort of stalemate between you and the carnival game operator. They lose nothing by you not playing, and you gain nothing by not playing. Nobody wins and nobody loses. Victory is not the goal, not because victory is undesirable, but because it's unachievable. Remember that the game cannot be won, it is rigged, and the best you can do is walk away and break even. I was talking to I Am Serious the other night, and he said that he wanted to talk to me about my transition from the MRA community to the MGTOW community during an upcoming interview. But this is a complicated topic that I didn't think lended itself well to an unscripted, freeform conversation. Thus, allow me to explain the essence, or as Marcus might say, the platonic form, that drives the exploitation of men. Before we examine society, we need to talk about reproduction and sexual dimorphism. This is a very complex topic that deserves its own video, but such a video already exists. I'm linking to a Bane 666 video called The Gender Dilemma Episode 2 Dismantling Patriarchy Theory Part 1 Introduction / Sexual Dimorphism. It's over 40 minutes long and it's a dry watch, but it's extremely informative and this information is vital in order to understand how sexual dimorphism influences reproduction and thus influences society. I'm going to move forward based on the assumption that you're already familiar with these concepts. If I lose you or you become confused, please watch the Bane 666 video. There are two reproductive strategies in nature, tournament and pair bonding. Species with a tournament strategy have high levels of sexual dimorphism, wherein males compete for exclusive sexual access with a large amount of females. Species with a pair bonding strategy have low levels of sexual dimorphism, wherein women select their own mates, and men compete for the affection of women using gifts such as food, and they also assist in the rearing of children. Humanity sits somewhere in between these two extremes, and this is the origin of the concepts such as the alpha male and the beta male. Alpha males often have high sexual dimorphism, wherein beta males often have low sexual dimorphism. To demonstrate what I mean by this concept of individual sexual dimorphism, let's use something I'll call the drag queen silhouette test. Imagine how you would look wearing a dress and wig. If someone saw your silhouette, would you pass as a woman? Or would it be obvious that you were a man based on your height and frame? If you could pass as a woman, you may have a lower degree of sexual dimorphism, and pair bonding would be your best reproductive strategy. If it was obvious from your frame that you were a man, you have a higher degree of sexual dimorphism, and a tournament strategy, also known as being an alpha male, is the best reproductive strategy for you. In my video, The Magic of Male Scarcity, I talk about how when the male population dips in comparison to females, especially as a consequence of war, the result is a patriarchal system wherein women are largely the property of men. But there's a good reason for that. The men with high degrees of sexual dimorphism, i.e. the alpha males, are much more likely to survive these wars, due to them being taller, stronger, and more aggressive, while the males with lower amounts of sexual dimorphism are going to get killed in much greater numbers. In short, a society built on warfare, where the male population is unstable, actually favors men with a high degree of sexual dimorphism, and thus favors a tournament-style reproductive strategy, which I describe as a patriarchy because the men own the women. However, a peaceful society with a stable male population favors men with low degrees of sexual dimorphism and favors a pair-bonding reproductive strategy, which we refer to as gynocentrism, because the woman is free to select her own mate and set the terms of the relationship. This is also demonstrated in Brifault's Law. So with all that out of the way, I want you to consider our society. Our society is not a neutral actor in the struggle between the sexes. Think about what benefits society as a whole. Do men with high degrees of sexual dimorphism, high aggression, and who benefit from a tournament mating strategy of impregnating as many women as possible and having nothing to do with their offspring benefit society? I would say no, they don't. In fact, society demonizes those men for very good reasons. Joker said it best in The Dark Knight during his interrogation scene with Batman.
Don't talk like one of them. You're not. Even if you'd like to be. To them, you're just a freak. Like me. They need you right now. When they don't, they'll cast you out. Like a leper. See, their morals, their code. It's a bad joke. We've dropped at the first sign of trouble. They're only as good as the world allows them to be. I'll show you. When the chips are down, these civilized people, they'll eat each other. See, I'm not a monster. I'm just ahead of the curve.
Society isn't gynocentric because of the Frankfurt School or the Jews or any other conspiracy. Society is gynocentric, period. The yoke of gynocentrism is only broken temporarily when war and violence send the male population into freefall. But as soon as the population stabilizes, the wars end, and their strength and aggression is no longer beneficial, they are cast out like a leper, as Joker said. As an alternative to exile, masculinity is demonized, and laws are passed to punish men using force and shame in order to incentivize them into assuming the roles and strategies of a low sexually dimorphic man. This is why marriage laws punish men but don't punish women. They are designed to prevent men who naturally benefit from a tournament-style reproductive strategy from seeking that path. Child support and alimony cause men to think twice about leaving their wives and impregnating multiple women. Numerous laws exist to rein in the natural tendencies of these masculine men, and as genuine war becomes less likely in a society, the more misandric and gynocentric the society becomes. It's not a coincidence that third-wave feminism, with its irrational hatred of men and masculinity, came about in the 1990s, directly after the fall of the Soviet Union and the end of the looming threat of nuclear war. As soon as the Iron Curtain fell, as soon as the threat was over, as soon as the warrior was no longer needed, he was cast out like a leper. That is essentially what third-wave feminism is about. It is the society seeking to purge itself of masculine men through shame and force. It bears repeating that society is not a neutral actor in all this. Peaceful societies benefit from men who pair bond, as this puts less strain on welfare programs. And men who have a low amount of sexual dimorphism are less likely to commit violent crimes. A man with a high amount of sexual dimorphism is treated as a threat, a liability, and a problem that needs to be solved. This is solved in one of two ways, either by converting the masculine man into a more effeminate man, or by eliminating the masculine men after they are no longer needed. You actually see both of these events happening simultaneously during the final scene of the 1960 Western The Magnificent Seven, which is itself a reimagining of the film Seven Samurai. Once the heroic gunslingers save the poor village, they are praised for their heroism and sacrifice, and then they were prompted to leave. However, one of the gunslingers had fallen for a beautiful woman from the village, and he gives up his mercenary lifestyle to quote-unquote settle down with this woman, thus assimilating into what we now recognize as Blue Pill Society. This is the difference between a warlike and a civilized society, or even a society that transitions from being warlike to being civilized. Respect for masculinity is directly proportional to the threats the society faces, but it's always temporary. As soon as the threat passes, masculinity is demonized, and men are held down or driven out, unless they renounce their ways and submit to the gynocentric culture. This trend will continue until the society is threatened again, and then they will call out for help from the very men they've shamed, demonized, incarcerated, and destroyed.
Well, that's it for this video. I hope you liked it and found it informative. Please like, favorite, comment, and subscribe if you haven't already. Please share this with anyone you think it might help, and I'll see you next time.